Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaf Flag, the aftermatch podcast of the LFC Red Poets. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and I'm joined tonight by Tom Keegan and Ben Kent Jr. as we look back on the horror show by the Reds at Goodison last night, which resulted in our first derby loss at Goodison since 2010 under Roy Hodgson. Anyway, we'll start off and relive the nightmare performance again. So, Tom, when the team was announced just around about 7 o'clock last night, I think it was probably, you know, the team that most of us expected when Jürgen had rested a lot of the players at Fulham at the weekend, and with no Gakpo, whose wife had gone into labour, and no Jota, who'd picked up another knock and was out for a couple of weeks. The front three basically picked itself, didn't it? And in midfield, I think it was just a decision whether Endo was going to start, and if he did, which one of Szoboszlai and Jones were going to miss out. So, and obviously, you know, Ibu retained in place of Kwanzaa. So you couldn't really argue with the team, could you?
No, we got the same spot on, didn't we, more or less. I think the only one I got wrong, I put Gakpo would play, and I put Jota to play alongside him. But like, Jota was out injured, which I didn't know before when we done that. And Gakpo went out, you know, like with personal circumstances. There's nothing you can say about that. So yeah, I looked at the team. Team were fine. You looked out more than happy. Thought, like, you know, that they're strong enough. Even Curtis, why I said Curtis in place of Endo at the last podcast, because he's a local lad, and I think he more be more in tune with what was going on in the game than I thought Endo would have been. But as I say, we'll talk about things in a bit.
Yeah, Ben, so there wasn't a lot you could do with the front three, although, you know, in an ideal world, you know, probably I wouldn't have started with Salah and Nunes based on how the performances have been over the last couple of weeks. But as there was no Jota and Gakpo, there was no choice but to start them.
No, I mean, I got the team wildly wrong. And I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but it wasn't the team that I would have picked. I think I sent you the team yesterday, and mine was totally different. I had Elliot starting, which I think he should have done. I think that was a mistake not to start him, especially after the Fulham game. I had Endo starting as well, and my midfield three was McAllister, Endo, and Elliot. You can't argue with the team. On paper, it was probably as strong as we could have picked. I just think Jürgen picked a lot of players that weren't in form. And ultimately it showed, but hey-ho. It's over now, isn't it?
It is. So, Tom, it was another really, really slow start for Liverpool. And when you go into Goodison, the last thing you can afford to do is make a slow start and give them encouragement. And that's what Liverpool did. And because of the slow start we had, the fans got behind them. They become more confident. And they started to really push us back and pick up on every mistake. Helped, should I say, by some really poor referee decisions who was giving them, you know, fouls for little when there was nothing really in them. I'm not want to make this clear now. You know, I'm not blaming the referee for our defeat, but it wasn't the best refereeing performance I've ever seen. You know what I mean? So that needs to be pointed out. But it wasn't responsible for our ineptitude in the way we started the game.
They come out with a game plan, Les, didn't they? They had an idea what they were going to do. We knew the team that he picked. We all said he's going to play four, he's going to play five, and he's going to play one up front. Calvin Lewin would be the big tall man who'd go up front. And everyone knew what they were going to do. He played it to a T. Calvin Lewin terrorised Liverpool from the start, from the first minute. And that set the tone. I think we sort of went into a shell, and Everton grew more confidence. And as you, what you said is the it whipped up the crowd. And I think it didn't help that we started as slow as we did. But you know, some I've looked at this all. I've thought about it all night, and I was thinking about the game, and I've spoke to loads of people. And I've spoken, funny enough, I've spoken to quite a few Evertonians today. You'd be surprised to hear, you know, as they've come looking for me. But I'm quite happy talking to them. You know, it doesn't bother me saying that they were the better team on the night. You got the tactics right and we got the tactics wrong. But I was disappointed in our start because I think we're a far better team than we started the game. We give them... We literally could have been one down within the first 5 minutes, couldn't we, of the game? You know, he was given a penalty and Ali was booked. You know, as it happened, it was offside, which that should have given us a warning. But as it panned out, it didn't give us a warning. We didn't learn nothing from it.
There was a... Tommy's right there, Ben, isn't he? Because there was an incident probably within the first sort of few minutes of the game where there was a ball got played up in the air just over the halfway line for Ibu and Calvert-Lewin to jostle for, and Ibu just got bullied by Calvert-Lewin. And you know, for somebody with his sort of pedigree, as a top international who's played in a World Cup final and you know, it is regarded as one of the best young centre-backs, you know, in Europe. It wasn't very good, you know, that he was sort of perceived as very weak in that situation, you know, in losing that duel. And that, for me, when that happened, that was the catalyst for what happened for the rest of the game. And then, as he said, you know, Tommy said then, not, you know, there was the penalty incident. And you thought when we got away with that, that would have woke us up, but it didn't have any effect on us whatsoever.
No, we haven't woke up, Les, since half time at Old Trafford. Like, genuinely haven't. We've been sleepwalking ever since then. The start yesterday was diabolical. Well, the whole game was, but specifically the start. We had a shocking attitude yesterday. It seems to me like the players thought all we need to do is turn up and get the result. Calvert-Lewin, I might be going on a bit of a hyperbole here. That was probably the best centre-forward performance I've seen against us this season. I'm struggling to think of a centre-forward that caused us that many problems continuously. It was a far better performance than the likes of Erling Haaland's done against us. He bullied us. There's no other way to describe it. Ibu looked shocking. And I think he's been a little bit poor for a while. I've said it on this podcast a couple of times. I don't think there's much between him and Kwanzaa. And I don't think a lot of the time when Kwanzaa plays, it's because of Ibu's fitness record. I think it's because Jürgen actually is starting to fancy him a bit more. But yeah, like the first 5 minutes when we conceded the penalty that was obviously ruled out for offside, that should have been the wake-up call. A season or two, well, not last season, but the season before that, it would have been. And I'm going to make a little point here about our former captain. I don't think if he was playing yesterday, that performance would have been allowed. I'm not saying he's a better player than the midfielders that we've currently got, but I don't think that performance would have lasted too long.
I'll just come here to that. He was captain last season when we gave some of the most awful performances. Yes,
I know, and I'm not arguing with that point. I'm just saying if he was on the pitch yesterday, I don't think that would have happened, but we'll never know, will we? It wasn't just him that was the reason for the diabolical season last year. But yesterday... we didn't play it like a Merseyside derby, did we? And I know that Jürgen has always said that we shouldn't play it like a Merseyside derby, and his record up until last night has been brilliant. But like I said, the attitude was just shocking. We give away a penalty, got out of jail free card when it got overall ruled. But we just didn't pick up. We were sloppy and slow with the ball. The amount of times I counted Van Dijk to Konate, Konate to Van Dijk, Trent across to Robbo. It was just across those back four all the time. And Everton, that just played into their hands. We're not going to cause many problems. But yeah, the Everton looked a threat every time they got the ball in that first half. And it was just poor, wasn't it? Really poor.
And, you know, Tom, you know, a lot of everything what Ben said there is right, really. But I don't agree with him about Joel Henderson. Maybe a couple of seasons ago, you know, when he was in his prime in Liverpool, you know, we're sort of on for 90 odd points per season and yep. playing at the best, it wouldn't have happened. But certainly that argument sort of wasted him for me because of some of the diabolical performances that we witnessed last season that he was part of, and he was also wearing the armband. So you constantly say it wouldn't have happened under his watch because it has happened under his watch. Maybe it was at the end of his career, but it still happened under his watch. And there was enough senior players out there, Tom, wasn't there? I'll come to you on this to get what your opinion is. There was enough senior players out there and players with experience, you know, and players who know what it means to play in a Merseyside derby. They should have been able to sort that out and sort of say, right, you know, we've had our fright now. Don't let this happen again. But not long after that, with them messing about with it, and Curtis Jones, who I thought was absolutely abysmal and has been abysmal ever yep. since he come back into the side mm-hmm. After his recent injury, he'd done nothing for me. As I said on the last podcast, Tom, he's done nothing for me to warrant starting last night in his performances in recent weeks since he come back from his latest injury. He gave a silly free kick away, and he gave the referee an excuse to give the free kick, which I thought was very, very soft, which ultimately led to their goal, with some defending in there that the Keystone Cops, for people who are a certain age, would have been proud of.
Yeah, I'll start off with a few little points there, Les, before we start. I think the first thing, Michael had said exactly the same thing as what Ben's just said. Phoned me during the game and said exactly the same. That wouldn't have happened with Henderson. He said he's nowhere near the player. It's funny, Kevin, the eldest boy, said the same thing. I more or less thought like you, but there's a lot of people were saying that not for his performances or what he would do of last season or before that, but because he was a moaner and he would moan all the way through the game. So I can understand what Ben says. I personally don't think he'd have made any difference, like he said, but I understand why a lot of people have said that today. I'll go to the second point. I totally agree with you about Madley. I thought he was picky with Liverpool. He allowed them soft free kicks. You could say it was clever play by Everton, and it's the dark arts, and he done it well. What Dyche should have done, and he played the referee. Yeah, I'll agree with you over Curtis. I thought the first part with the free kick. But where I disagree with what you're saying about Curtis, yeah, I'll go along that since he's come back from his injury, he has struggled a little bit, that he hasn't been nowhere near his best. But it's like so many players. I look at a player that we bought, Szoboszlai, who's come in and literally did absolutely nothing. He broke into the box in the first half, got tackled after that, and did literally nothing. He done for the whole of the game. I think I've read two articles up to now, and both, I think two, three articles where players were marked. He got three. Him and Konate got three. Curtis Jones, in both of them, got five. Now, you can say that wasn't particularly good. Well, the highest mark we got was six. So
I don't know how Curtis got a five, I honestly don't. I mean, I'd have.
You know what you're looking. I think you what you're looking at. What I look at is our midfield. Well, this is what I was trying to say to you last night. When I look at our midfield, I look at it as a unit. You've got McAllister, who's playing as a six in the more uncomfortable role of six, and you've got Curtis, who's more in tune with the six and not as an eight, and you've got Szoboszlai, who is an eight, but he's playing without confidence or for whatever reason after an injury or whatever. So you look at the three of them, it was disjointed. So the midfield was all over the place. And that's why Everton played like they did. They played, I was so saying to you last night about the transition. They played the low block and they transitioned quickly. We couldn't cope with that transition. And that's why they broke. That's why they made the midfield sort of impotent for most of the game. And as I'll go on to later on about the other parts, but where I agree with you, once the free kick's been given, our play in the box for the free kick was abysmal. As you don't expect international players to let the ball go pinging round in the 6-yard box. You don't expect to be beaten by two headers, first of all, in the box. But we did. We lost both of them. And then the ball pings across to Braithwaite. And then Ali doesn't cover himself in glory as he lets it go through his body.
To be honest with you, Tom, I was going to come to the Alisson thing because I hadn't heard one sort of comment that Ali should have done better. And I was thinking when it happened and it went in, I thought you would expect Ali to save that 99 times out of 100. And if Kelleher would have been in goal, he'd have been getting pelters for that, saying that, you know, Alisson would have saved that. You know, as he got pelters for one of the goals he conceded in one of the later games that he played, and people were saying, oh, you know, if Alisson would have been in goal, yeah, he would have saved that one. I think it was the United goal, one of the goals United scored in the cup. But Ben, it was absolutely comical defending. It was like, rather than internationals, it was like Pete and Tommy as the back four trying to defend that, wasn't it? Because there was people just, it was just like panic stations. There were just people swinging the leg.
Yeah.
At the ball and sort of nobody taking responsibility. And it was, and every time I thought, watching it, I thought, bloody hell, we've got away with that and got it clear. Somebody else was like a pinball machine in there, wasn't it? And it eventually dropped to Branthwaite, who didn't hit a very hard shot, and it went under Ali.
Yeah, he sort of mishit it, didn't he? I think if he would have hit it properly, he probably would have missed. It was comical. I don't think there's any other way to describe it. We had numerous chances to clear that ball. I think it all, given away from memory, correct me if I'm wrong here, was it a daft foul by Ibu?
No, it was a daft foul by Curtis Jones.
I'm thinking of another one from Ibu then, which I was rollicking him over about. I can't remember which one is which. I'm trying to forget about the game as much as I can. Giving away the free kick's one thing, but then I think, especially in the first, well, up until Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored his goal, I don't think we won a first ball once from
we
any set piece.
That's
what I mean, but what I was going to say was that was the next point. You can lose the first ball, but you've got to go for the second ball. And for the goal, it was Ibu this was the point I was going to make. I think Trent had that. He could have almost headed it away and he jumped and it went over him and it fell to them on the edge of the box, who put it back in to Ibu, who swung it and he mishit it and it went across. But I remember I did slate Trent for that because it was half-arsed, his jump at it. There was no effort in it. It was just laughable. If we weren't in the midst of a title race or if it was against Everton, but I just don't understand where this attitude's come from. And it was the same against Palace. Like, and numerous other games, Atalanta.
I mean, to be fair, Ben, the goal Palace scored against us is probably the best goal I've seen scored against us at Anfield.
Yeah, no, it was, Les, but they also had chances that we give them, that we gifted them chances in the game. The goal was brilliant. I've got no qualms with the goal. It was brilliant. But the amount of defensive mistakes we made in that game, it's almost like the defenders, bar Virgil van Dijk, all rely on him and all expect him to just be the man. And if he's not on full form, the others just go into a bit of hiding. I'm sure we'll talk about Trent in the hybrid position later, but my God, we need to drop that. It was looking... If you watched that game yesterday, you would never think we were in a title race. You wouldn't think the attitude of the players that they wanted to win the league. Virgil van Dijk said it after the game. He summed it up perfectly. It was... You said earlier about the last time we played at Goodison was and lost was under Hodgson. And nobody wants to go back to those days. I mean, but that performance yesterday was reminiscent of those teams.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. It was very reminiscent of that performance, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
But Tom, after Everton scored and went 1-0 up, it was as though the players and the fans to a degree couldn't believe that they were 1-0 up. And the whole play, the players and the fans, for me, watching on TV, become a bit nervous. And we started to get a foothold back in the game. And then the first big chance come to Nunes, who had the whole of the goal to aim at and blasted it straight at Little Arms, who couldn't believe his luck. You know, he could have put it, he had an open goal to put it the other side. And, you know, he hits it straight at the keeper. Then I think Nunes did really well to create a chance for Diaz with a header. And Diaz did exactly the same from a more difficult chance, I would say. But he again had the same side of the goal to hit as what Nunes did and hit Little Arms again. And then finally, Salah had two attempts at a shot, which, you know, vintage Mo Salah would have gobbled up the first time. He completely scuffed his kick the first time, which was the better chance. And then made a complete mess of the second one.
He bloomed over the bar.
Yeah, you know, and they're sort of, I would say, eight out of 10 plus chances that you would expect a team going for the league to be able to take, one of your strikers to be able to take those chances that have been created and get you back in the game. The sad thing is had we taken one of those chances, we'd have probably put the pin in Everton's bubble and gone on to win the game. So what was your views on those?
It's been a recurring theme, hasn't it, since if we go back, it all started realistically at Manchester United in the FA Cup, where we battered them for most of the game, but we're missing chance after chance after chance. Or even though we come back and we're winning, we were poor in our finishing. We ended up coming back and scored a couple of goals in that game, three goals in that game. But to be fair, we were poor in our finishing. And it's been an ongoing thing, that, Les, hasn't it, since we went from there, you know, I think we went from there, then we had another setback. We had a win, I think. It was Sheffield Wednesday, we had a win after that.
Sheffield United,
we had a win against. And then, but that was after the scare and missing chances.
We made hard work of that.
Sheffield United, it was a great save from Kelleher, wasn't it, in the first minute? That stopped us 1-0 down.
Mm. Yeah. But it's just been an ongoing theme since then. And it's like the three of them. Even Luis Diaz, who's been probably one of the best players for the last four or five games, and the only one showing in most of the games. But you just look and you're thinking to yourself, whenever the ball falls to any of them, you've got no confidence that we're going to put it away. And that's completely the opposite of the first part of the season. Because we were adding strikers who were scoring goals, and then we were bringing the two off the bench. Any two could have been Jota, could have been Nunes, could have been Gapco, any of them from three from five. But like, and then the others were coming on scoring goals. So like, with the problems that we've had over the season, we put away by scoring lots of goals. Now the goals have dried up. We're still conceding. So these chances that are getting now, they're being snatched at. I can't believe Darwin Nunes, a player that scores some of the goals that you see him score for Uruguay, you see him score for Liverpool. You look at him and he scores some brilliant, brilliant goals. And yet, no one can tell me that this lad, all of a sudden, goes when he gets in front of goal to like a gibbering wreck and he can't finish. You know, like, it's just, I don't know what it is. I'm going to use your word. I'm going to cop out and go for the C word and confidence.
I don't think it's confidence.
I think it's got to be, Ben. You can't have three misfiring forwards that were scoring earlier in the season that can't hit a barn door between them.
I don't, with Nunes, I don't think it's confidence. I don't think he's ever been a good finisher. He's a good player. He's not a good finisher. He never
can
has
I just,
been.
Can I just say, I've done a little bit of research there. I got in touch with Jed and had a little chat to Jed about what's it called. He's hit the woodwork 15 times this season, Nunes. 15 times. He's hit the woodwork in the Premier League 9 times.
Mm.
9 times. You know, and like, if them nine goals go in, we wouldn't be sitting here today talking about how bad a finishing Nunes is.
Yeah, but it's, they didn't go in, did they?
No, but it happened to Suarez the first season, Ben.
Yeah, but this is the second season now. And I don't think there's anything now that's better than when he first came, genuinely.
I think when you look at him with Bielsa, and I think Les made a great point the other week, when Salah was out of the team and we changed the structure of the front three, we got the best out of Nunes. He was on his goal-scoring run. Since it's all changed back, he's gone back to how he was before Salah. So, I don't know. I'd be amazed. I've listened to Twitter today, all the loons on Twitter today, en masse, get rid of Nunes, get rid of Robertson, get rid of Salah, get rid of, who was the other one? He was getting rid of, about Curtis, get rid of Curtis, get rid of, it's full all day. And you know, do you know what? We were a poor side last season, and we come into this season as a team who've overperformed all season. And we haven't been perfect anywhere through the season. We've conceded goals 15 times and we've come back like mentality monsters, and we've ended up getting results, and it's dragged us to this title race. If we are brutally honest, if I sit here and brutally honest with you and Ben and but everyone who listens to our podcast, and I say we were right in this title race. We've got as far as we have in the title race, but sometimes by the skin of our teeth, really, by some of the, we've overperformed this season. So now, because we've lost the league, or we've dropped out of the league, everybody's overreacting. So now we want to change everything. Now we were talking about 5 games ago having a really good squad.
I agree.
That's my rant over.
No, you're right, and I was thinking about that today. we've massively overachieved to a point. But the flip side is we found ourselves in a brilliant position and we have messed it up, really. I think I don't think there's going to be a mass exodus of players. I just don't think that's going to happen. I'm not going to sit here and lie. If we got an offer for Nunes that was close to where we paid for him, I would accept it. I would. And I've been on the fence about him all season. I think it's been pretty obvious that I have with some of the comments I've said about him on this. I've done the amount of times I've turned around to my dad on the cough and said, we're not going to win the league with him up front. And I genuinely believe it. We might win the league if he's played as a winger, but not as a centre forward. And I will die on that hill. I just think it's all well and good saying he's hit the post 15 times or whatever, but there's a reason why he keeps hitting the post. I just don't think he's composed in front of goal. Like, that chance will come up.
I agree.
Can't just
I agree.
whack it as hard as you can. It was an easy opportunity. I know Salah had easy opportunities as well, and we'll come on to that. I think the Diaz one was a bit harder. He was stretching for it, and that was unlucky. It wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back yesterday with Nunes, because there's obviously a player there, but I just don't think as an out and out forward, he's going to win us the league.
You know, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said there, Ben, in terms of Nunes. When he doesn't have time to think and he just relies on instinct, then he'll take the chance.
David, that really didn't have time to think yesterday with that shot.
I think, yeah, but Nunez's remit is just hit it as hard as you can. You know
I
what I mean?
I think we're defending him too much.
No composure. He's got no composure. I agree with that. But what I will say is, and again, you know, and it's one of those where you flip a coin or you make a decision and only time will tell if it's the right one. Now, you said, you know, if an offer come in around about what we paid for him, then you'd sell him, right? He's still only young. He's still only young for a striker.
How old is he?
People are now talking about people like Ollie Watkins and Ivan Toney and people like that. When they were Nunez's age, people weren't talking about them being top, top players. But now people are saying, oh, go and sign Watkins. Go and sign Ivan Toney. Right. Now, you pay your money, you take your chance. Right. Now, at the end of the day, you know, I think there's a player there in Nunes. Right. Whether he'll ultimately be good enough to be and be a centre forward that will lead Liverpool to a league title or the Champions League, I honestly don't know, but he's young enough where he can improve.
He can, but I just, like I said to you, there is a player there. I've got no doubt about that. There's flashes of it where you think he's more than a player. He's just not a centre forward. I'm convinced of that. Put him out wide. Put him in Salah's position next season.
Do you think that, like, and I know we're sort of going to move the goalposts a bit, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that more after, but do you think maybe a change of formation might help him? You know what I mean? Where he is the centre forward and rather than playing 4-3-3, he's maybe got 4-2-3-1, where he's a bit more of a focal point. You know what I mean? Because obviously there's a new manager going to come in. You know, he might unleash something completely different with it to get the best out of this. See, I believe again, and Tommy touched on it before, that this Liverpool side under Jürgen has been set up to get the best out of Mo and initially Sadio Mane. They have the two jewels in the crown going forward with Bobby the, you know, the sort of the master craftsman, if you want, the something
the
different,
architect of it all,
the best, the architect, whatever you want to call him, you know, the put everything together. Now we've lost two of those front three. Mo is coming to the end of his magnificent career at Liverpool, right? But it's really easy, isn't it, to point the finger at Nunes. Now I look at the games from, and I go from Man United to Sheffield United, where Mo got taken off, to Brighton at home, to Crystal Palace at home, right, and then yesterday, right? And I'm saying a prime Mo Salah, right, at his best, right, say going back two seasons prior to the last AFCON, in those games, he would have had, I would say, if he hadn't gone home with the match ball in each one, he'd have had at least two match balls and got a couple of goals in the others because of the quality of the chances that he missed, right? And it's easy to point the finger and say, you know something, it's down to Darwin Nunes, and he's got to take his share of the blame. But people are sort of frightened to sort of speak about the elephant in the room that is Mo Salah's fault. Because he has had more chances in those games to win them for Liverpool than what Darwin Nunes has. And that's not excusing the chances that Darwin Nunes has missed.
Mm.
But he hasn't missed anywhere near as many as Mo.
No, he hasn't. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. At least he's creating the chances, I guess. But Salah's form has dropped off a cliff. There's no getting away from it. I was speaking to you yesterday, and I don't think this formation at the moment is helping him either. Oh, crap, City have just scored a second goal. Deflection from a free kick that was never a free kick. I've said it a few times of late. I think if the club received an offer for Mo Salah in the summer, they'd accept it. I don't think he'd go, though. I'm pretty convinced that we will have Mo Salah till the end of his contract. His form has been poor since the injury. He's come back, scored a few penalties and stuff like that, but he hasn't looked a particularly good player. This hybrid position is not helping him, though. It generally isn't. His form in front of goal has been shocking, but the amount of times that he's just left isolated on the wing, there's nobody there to support him at all. And I just don't think it's working. I think we need to move
the thing
on.
Is, from, better, from I agree with you. I agree with you to a point, right? But the other thing I will say, it's not that he's not getting no support when he's on the wing. It's his finishing, which you used to put your hat on. You know, like the one that come off the keeper, for example, the one that come off the keeper at Old Trafford. And he runs past and he hits him in his right foot.
Yeah.
And it just sort of, it doesn't even hit the target. You know what I mean? Now, what I'm trying to say is, if that would have been Nunes, it would have been blasted everywhere. Now, I know Nunes hasn't got as much credit in the bank as what Mo has, but you can only comment on what you're seeing, right? And all I'm saying is, and I'm not dissing Mo Salah in any shape or form. I think when he finally walks out the door at Liverpool and has played his last game, he will walk out and be able to hold his head up high with the amount of goals he's scored, some of the great performances he's given, and he'll give his all for Liverpool Football Club. Right, but you have to comment on what you're seeing now. And Mo is, I would say, more responsible at the minute for us being where we are at this moment over the last 4 or 5 weeks than as equally responsible, if you want to call it that, as say what Nunes is. But I just still keep saying that Mo has missed more guilty chances than what Nunes has.
It's collective, don't less, isn't it? It's a collective as a forward line.
It's tough, but it is.
Yeah, but the point is, we're conceding goals. We're conceding goals nearly every game. So, like, right away, most of the times, we're 1-0 down. Mm-hmm. So these chances then become even more pressure, don't they? Because you've got to take them, because we're not defending well.
We're not set up to defend, are we? That's the problem. We're not set up to defend.
The teams are cutting through us, so we've got to take these chances. So when these chances come along, you're under pressure to put them away.
Mm.
Whereas if we had control of the game, where we got control of the game. You knew it was nil-nil. The chances come along. You're not under the pressure that you've got to score because we're 1-0 down, or we could be, you know, like 2-0 down. But it's like, that's been that. I think it's a collective thing. I think as a whole team.
But we look nervous. We look really nervous.
We really did.
I said to my dad, like, during the Crystal Palace game, we only had, I think, three or four players from the season we won the league, and it showed, like, because all the others looked really nervous. And it was the same case yesterday. You're right, as soon as we went 1-0 down, well, actually, no, before, from the kickoff, we looked too laid back, no urgency. The amount of times I said, like, there's no urgency to rage when we were watching the game last night. There's no control in the games. We look petrified.
Yeah.
And I never thought a Jurgen Klopp team, I'd say that about us.
Tom,
so
we had those three chances, and it just looked a matter of time before Liverpool got themselves back in the game. But the referee's whistle comes after 6 minutes of added time in the first half. We go in the half time, 1-0 down, and you're thinking to yourself, now let's have a response at the start of the second half. And then, you know, we start off the second half, you know, reasonably well, you know, without, you know, we were totally in control of the game, and it was just like it's a continuation of the first half. They'd had to put on Ashley Young instead of Godfrey. And you thought, there's an area of the team that we can get at and cause some problems. But they protected them really well. Or we decided not to try and attack down that side. You know? So it was one of the two, or a mixture of both. Right. And then the ball gets played up to Mo Salah, who absolutely loses the ball. It gets put out for the corner. And then I have to say this, right? And, you know, I'd crucify the worst fullback I've ever seen play for Liverpool, Philip Deggan, if he had defended like that. The defender from Trent, a Scouser, from that corner, was nothing short of pathetic.
It wasn't defending.
Absolutely pathetic.
There was
no dealers.
He's vice captain. He's vice captain of this team. Right. You know, he's supposed to be out there to set the example. Mm. And that defending from the corner is probably one of the worst pieces of defending that I have ever seen in my time of watching Liverpool.
He did made no effort. He literally made no effort. Yeah. He stood like a statue, like, oh, well,
he
what should I do here?
He moved out the way.
But like, to give him a free header, you know, and then you're really under the cosh then, aren't you? Now you're 2-0 down, and then you're chasing the game. But then we do the opposite then. We up the tempo and start playing. We as if we've got like a bit of belief. Diaz started to drive us forward. And, you know, like, we started to go at them, got a few corners after, you know, straight after each other.
Virgil should have scored with a header, Tom, shouldn't he?
Terrible header. And then I thought, you know what? Sometimes as well, when you look, as with Atlanta, with Kate, with Harvey Elliott, with the shot that smacked the post, the inside of the post, you know, the bar in the post. And then you've got Diaz, a brilliant effort. He, you know, little arms was going nowhere near it, to be fair to him. And like, he was beating all ends up. But again, that's where we're at the moment. It hits the post, it comes out. That was our end. That had hit the post and gone in.
Yeah.
But you just felt that. And then again, we started to lose it then, Les. Then we were, after that momentum that we built up. And then by this time, he made a few changes. And he took Canate off. And then all of a sudden, Kwanzaa comes on and then plays Calvert-Lewin like he should have been played in the first place. You know, he gave him no respect. He got into him. He got stuck in.
Yeah. I mean, just after, can I just say, Tom, after the executions, they nearly scored again, didn't he? Where, you know,
Endo.
getting into the game.
Give the ball away.
Yeah, he lost, miscontrolled the ball on the edge of the box, and they had another effort that you thought, bloody hell, you know, what's going on here? I mean, what did you make of the three substitutions, Ben, at that point, you know, with Elliot, Endo and Kwan's coming on for Curtis, Sosbowen and Ibu?
I think all three of them were in the team that I picked. I'm going to criticise someone that I haven't criticised very often. But and Jürgen isn't immune to criticism, but I think his substitutions of late have been shocking, genuinely shocking. And I can't understand the thinking behind quite a lot of them. I think bringing Harvey on was the right call, and bringing Kwanzaa on was the right call, because Ibu was probably the worst performance I've seen him have for us. I think of late we've been making too many substitutions at the same time, which disrupts the rhythm of our play. Didn't really matter yesterday. But Endo coming on, he's been poor recently. The last month or so, he's been really poor. Came on, his first touch, you nearly conceded the goal. They should have scored from it. The only player that impacted the game really in a positive way was Harvey. I thought he was one of our better players. Not hard to choose from, but I thought he did actually all right when he came on. At least he was positive. He was getting the ball and he was trying to do something with it. A lot of his crossing was poor, but at least he was trying to influence the play.
I mean, he had the shot that Little Arm pushed over the bar as well. I'd agree that he tried to you know, to influence the game, and you know, his crossing was, you know, was winding me up a little bit at the time. But as you say, at least he was trying to do something.
I mean, he did a lot more than Jones, didn't he? Like Jones, I think you raised the point before. For the last month or so, since his injury, he hasn't been on it at all.
Absolutely abysmal.
He was playing the way he played a while ago, where he was slowing it up too much, and he was going side to side. Remember the West Ham game in the cup when he was brilliant and he was bombing on and driving forward. Yeah. Where's that Jones gone? Where's that Szoboszlai gone? Another thing, like, but I think Jones and Szoboszlai were very lucky to start yesterday. And again, this is the point about Jürgen. It's not often that I'm critical of him, but I think he got it wrong tactically yesterday. He genuinely did. I think, I don't know if it's, I'm loath to say it's like a team playing knowing the manager's gone, but that was how it felt.
You can't believe that though, can you?
You can't believe it, but you're watching it and you're thinking, I'm not being funny or anything, but I'm not sure Trent will get away with this with the next manager, you know, because you can be the best attacking fullback in the world, and you can be, let's not sugarcoat it, you can be a poor defender when somebody's running at you, but there's no excuse for a corner. There's no excuse. Me and you could defend better than that. You've got a standing start. You make it hard for the attacker. Now, Calvert-Lewin's going to win the ball 9 times out of 10 against Trent because he's bigger and stronger, but you make it difficult for him. That was pathetic, that.
Exactly.
It was utterly pathetic. And he's a Scouser. He's supported Liverpool all his life. I hope he's looking at himself in the mirror this morning. I think Virgil van Dijk's interview after the game was specifically about Trent, you know.
I was just going to ask you that, Tom. And then, you know, later on in the game, with about 10 minutes to go, you know, we're 2 down. And the commentator says, oh, Liverpool are making 2 more substitutions. And I'm looking over expecting to see Gravenberch, who'd scored a really good goal at Fulham at the weekend, and Dan's standing there ready to come on. And lo and behold, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Simicat and Gomez.
Yeah.
And that's when you sent me the text and said, they are the 2 worst substitutions you've ever seen. So elaborate, Tom.
Yeah, I didn't think they were appropriate at the time. Looking back in hindsight, he took them off. And I think he took Robbo off and he took Trent off. just to give the other two a game. I heard a little article. Let me tell you this first. I heard a little article what he said about Jaden Danz and what he'd said to him about why he wouldn't put him on. He said he felt they would have killed him out there on the way that the game was going, and to put him out would have done him more harm than good.
I
think he knows his players, so you presume it. That might have been the case, and I think you'll probably find he'll probably start him in a game in the next couple of games. But I think the substitution of Robbo and Sens, it just defied logic, really. Mm. Especially, I would have brought Gravenberch on. Mm. He would have just given you something else, wouldn't he? But I think at that point we'd give up. I think we just.
But even at that point, Tom, the way they are, right, and what I mean by that is they hadn't won a derby at Goodison since Roy Hodgson was managing in 2010, right? Even with 10 minutes to go, plus the added time that would have been added on, if Liverpool get a quick goal, then their crowd would have got really nervous. It would have given Liverpool a boost, and anything could have happened in those last 10 minutes. But I don't buy, by the way, and I think Jürgen is sort of, trying to cover his own back. And fair enough, he's got enough credit in the bank to do so.
Mm.
But, he put Jaden Danz on against Notts Forest, right, with the score at 0-0, because Liverpool needed a goal. And Jaden Danz was instrumental in Liverpool getting a goal when he went in and rattled the keeper. Mm. Right, he got a yellow card for it, but he rattled the keeper. And Liverpool then went on, to get a late winner through Darwin Núñez. Now, he didn't. Everton's defenders are no different than Nottingham Forest defenders. They've got two big rocks at the back. Yet he puts him on against Notts Forest. He comes on against Southampton and scores two goals.
And Chelsea, didn't he?
And he comes on against Chelsea in the at Wembley. So that sort of doesn't add up for me. It really doesn't add up for me. And you just need something. The ball could have just... He might not have done nothing. He might not have got a touch of the ball. Right.
But I agree with you, by the way, Les.
Yeah, I know you do.
You're preaching to the converted.
No, I'm not saying you don't disagree with me, by the way, but I'm just saying my piece here.
Yeah.
The ball could have just dropped in the box and he could have just been there, swung his foot on it and it goes in.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I'll take us all back to a day that still fills us all with shivers going down the spine. A man I sort of despised when he was manager, Alex Ferguson. They were going down to Aston Villa years ago, and they put on a fella called Makeda. Yeah. Right, I'd never heard of him. Right, and he scored two.
Mm.
He scored two. Right, no, that's because what at the hell have you got to lose a 2-0 down by putting the young striker on and say, right, you come up front with Darwin Núñez. Just challenge for the ball with the centre-backs. It could drop to Núñez. Mm. It could drop to Salah. It could drop to Diaz. You know what I mean? It's just that. So I'm sorry. I love Jürgen to bits. I do. He's right up there with Shanks. But that for me last night is no sort of answer to that or an excuse to that question. I don't know what you think, Ben.
I thought he just looks like he wants. He's looking like a man who's just waiting for it to finish now, Les, isn't he? To be fair,
that's
what you feel. He's
he looked defeated yesterday.
Yeah, just looking at him, the month of May can't come quick enough for Jürgen Klopp, I reckon. I think. What you said before, Ben, about the decision, about I'm not buying into it, the players, it must affect you when he decides that he's going. It must have some impact on the players and the staff.
Tom, I agree with that, but not when you're going for the big prize. It shouldn't.
I agree with you.
The players know it's gone.
It's a mental thing, isn't it?
They didn't know it had gone. When they played against Crystal Palace, they didn't know it was gone. When they played against Fulham, right? It wasn't gone when they kicked off, or there was still a chance when they kicked off last night.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
We needed teams to lose.
Right,
don't we?
So I think they knew it was gone, and I genuinely think this at Old Trafford. And it pains me to say it because I knew it then. I've messaged my dad and said the league has gone that day because City just don't drop points. They're 3-0 up away to Brighton after half an hour. They don't drop points at this time of the season. It just doesn't happen. Like, you know the script. Like, Arsenal have done better than I thought they had. I think at Atlanta, that game at Anfield finished Jürgen off, like, emotionally. I think he came out, didn't he, and said he was tired when he said, and he just looks done in.
Yeah,
like, Tom's right, like, the month of May for him, I think, looking back on it now, I think he probably wanted to go in May, in November. Like, he just, I reckon he probably wanted to go last summer, but he was talked into giving it one more year. The more I think about it, the more I think that is probably definitely what's happened now. But he's not immune to criticism. Like you, I'm not buying this thing about it would have affected Dan's. Christ, it should have affected Nunes then and Salah. It's not going to affect a young lad coming into a derby. He's going to be made up to get on that pitch. He's only a kid. He's a scouser, isn't he? So, I love Jürgen. You said he's up there with Shankly. For me, I'm too young for Shankly, way before my time. Jürgen is by far and away the best manager I've seen for us. I love the man to death and I'll defend him till I die on the hill defending him. But he's not immune to criticism. He got that wrong last night. And the last couple of weeks, there's been a lot of questionable things, I think. But... I'd still be over the moon tomorrow if he turned around and said, you know what, sod it, I'm staying. I'd be still over the moon for him next season. I hope I'm not wrong here, but maybe the time is right. And I never, ever, ever thought I'd say that.
I mean, one thing I will say, Ben, and I don't know whether you agree with this, Tom, but I would have hated Jürgen Klopp to go down the same road as Arsene Wenger went down with Arsenal fans. You know what I mean? So, and at the end of the day, you know, people will look and think, you know, we all want Jürgen to stay. You know what I mean? You know, we were all shocked when he made that announcement in January. And I'm totally with Ben. You know, if I was looking at Twitter at, you know, the press conference that he does tomorrow, and it come out that Jürgen had decided to stay for another year, I'd feel like it was Christmas Day. You know what I mean? But sometimes, you know, you have to look at Jürgen and think that he knows that he knows better than anybody else whether he's got how much energy you need. And he said something in his press conference yesterday leading up to the derby, and he said something like, you know, what people don't realise is that I don't switch off.
Mm.
He said, I go home and I'm thinking about it. And then you've got press conferences, you've got injury updates with players, you've got, you're sorting out training sessions, you know, you're sorting out what's going to happen pre-season, what formation I'm going to play. And he says, I'm responsible for all these players. I'm the one who has to name the team and make some of the players unhappy because I don't pick them. That's all down to me, not to anybody else. And basically, he was saying, you know, basically, it's easy for supporters to turn around and say, you know, basically, let's have two players for each position. But then at the end of the day, it's not the supporters then who have to try and, you know, go to the players and saying, oh, you're not even getting stripped this week, you're not on the bench, or you're on the bench this week and not starting. So, for instance, Ryan Gravenberch last night, you know, he comes in for his first game since the Sheffield United game, scores a really good goal at Fulham, and then Jürgen tells him last night, oh, by the way, Ryan, you're on the bench again tonight. And then, you know what I mean? And he doesn't even get on. So we have a bit of fun at the end of the podcast when we ask Pete to name his team. But we're not then having to tell those players who we haven't selected, you know, that you're not starting and trying to keep harmony in the squad. And all that must take its toll on him, mustn't it, Tom?
I said that today. I agree with Ben. I think he's gone physically and mentally. He looks tired. He looks drained. Doesn't look himself. He's got nothing left. I don't think Jürgen Klopp. I think one thing Jürgen Klopp is, he's as honest as the day's long. And when he said he's emotionally drained, he is emotionally drained. He's gone. I agree with Ben 100%. That the time is right. It's right for Jürgen Klopp. If Jürgen Klopp stayed at Liverpool Football Club for another year, God knows what it would do to his mental state, or not just his mental state, but just his physical state. He just looks done in. Mm. You can see him. There was an incident there, and it's easy watching it on the TV. During the match, he just sat there. But motionless on the bench, just sitting watching, and like powerless, like he just, and at that stage, you're looking and you're thinking to yourself, in his best interest, it is time for him to go. What I was going to do when we had a little bit of time, or even after this, the podcast, to have a chat and say, what is the lifespan of a Premier League manager in today's game? And I think whereas we have player managers like Wenger and Ferguson, he went on for years. I don't think you'll ever see the likes of that again. No. I think the lifespan of a football manager in the modern day, in the modern game, with all the stresses, strains and things, is probably where Jürgen's at. We've had him probably a year more than he would have done. I think where he's at now, it's the right thing for Jürgen Klopp, and it breaks my heart when he decided to go, and I'm devastated like everybody else, and I'll be really, when he goes on the last game, it'll probably be one of the worst days in my footballing life, you know. But like, you look back and you think for the betterment of Jürgen Klopp, then it's the right thing. And as I said before, I don't think it can come quick enough for him. He really does need a period of time away from the game to get himself back.
Sorry to interrupt you, Tom. I don't think we'll ever see him in management again. I think the only role is the German national coach. And even that, I'm not sure he'll really be bothered about. I just think for Jürgen and for us, there's no better man to be our manager. And I think everything about him, there might be somebody that's better tactically. There probably is. But I don't think there's anybody as a man that I would rather have as a Liverpool manager. I didn't really know much about Jürgen before he took the job. I obviously knew who he was and the job that he did at Dortmund. But he had me within about a minute of his press conference as our manager when he came in. The stuff he was saying, the way he talked, everything, his political beliefs just align perfectly to the majority of our fans, myself included, and the city. I don't think we'll ever get that again. I just don't think it will happen. He's just unique, and the job he's done has been better than what I was even hoping it would be, really. I think he's been robbed of a legacy because of reasons out of his control. But It might well be the right time for him. We won't know until the future, because you're right about the point about Arsene Wenger. He hung on for about 5 years longer than he should have done. And if that was Jürgen, I'd hate the crowd to turn on him, because he doesn't deserve it. And I don't think that would happen, but you just don't know, dear. Our crowd is fickle.
I mean, I don't think, Ben, I don't think the match-going fans would.
No,
You
I
know,
don't think.
not,
I
not
think,
so much,
yeah.
not so much in the ground anyway. There might be
Twitter,
murmurings,
yeah.
but on social media, you know, they were turning on him last season, weren't they, saying, you
Yeah.
know, he should go. And in January, you know, they got what they wanted when he announced, you know, that he was going. And I find it a little bit, you know, sort of funny, you know, in a way that like, you know, a few weeks ago, Twitter were going on about, you know, Pep Linders and, you know, surely, you know, he must be in the frame for the Liverpool job if you know, where Jürgen going. And, you know, whoever's coming in should try and get him to stay. And all of a sudden now, since sort of yesterday, it's all Linders' fault again. You know what I mean? It's his fault. It's
Yes.
his fault that we signed Nunes, Diaz, and Gakpo. You know what I mean? It's his fault that we're playing the inverted fullback. It's his fault that, you know, that we're starting off the games really slow. It's his fault that he's had, you know, too much. He's had too much influence in the transfer market, which has then forced Klopp to fall out with the likes of Michael Edwards and stuff like that. So it's just a bizarre place, is Twitter.
I'll
You know
tell
what I
you
mean?
what, Les. I'll tell you what, Paul Joyce wrote an article today, which I found absolutely, you know, like, have
Well,
you read it?
that's where it come up from. That's where when that article was
Yeah.
released. That's where the Pep Linders stuff has come from again,
I'm
if you see what I mean.
telling you, the cuckoo goose saying that he was, Edwards just wanted to sign him. But like it was totally on Jürgen Klopp to buy Nunes, and he's saying like no, I love Paul Joyce, and I thought that was a strange article, especially at the time.
It's a bit of a naughty comment, that.
It was a really naughty, it was a really naughty comment. And as I say, I love Paul, I love him to pieces, and you know what's it called? But I thought that was it was not the time to say that them type of things, you
No,
know. I thought
you
now
can't defend
we don't
himself,
want
can he?
we, you know, like no. And I think as a club, all we've got to do at the moment now is just consolidate. And it's funny, I was thinking today, I was going to ask you a question in a minute, Les, and Ben. I looking at our last four games and after last night, I was thinking to myself, the season will go one way or the other. They'll either now, by the title being away, they'll know that the title is gone. So the last four games, they can play free with no pressure, with nothing really to worry about, and play freely. And they probably will go and win all four games. It wouldn't surprise me that. Or it could have the other adverse effect where we just stumble in the last four games and we just. How many out of the four games you see us win?
As I say, it's difficult. It's difficult to say because, you know, if Liverpool play like they did against Everton, then they'll struggle. But I don't think they'll play like that again.
No, I don't.
I
I
think
think we're pressure free now.
we'll probably win. I don't think we'll lose more than one out of four if we lose any. You
Yeah,
know
I
what I mean?
don't. I think we'll. I think we'll sort of. It will be. I think we'll probably see three performances now. There's no pressure. It's
Yeah.
amazing when the
Just
pressure's lifted off you.
to finish off on last night's game, and I
Yeah.
know this is probably a difficult, easy decision, if you see what I mean, but who was your player of the match, Tom?
There's only two. I thought Diaz. And I thought Harvey Elliott got a notable mention because I thought he tried to lift the play, and I thought Kwanzaa did well when he come on, but it was only Luis Diaz. I couldn't think of anyone else.
Ben,
Ideas.
Yeah, Diaz for me. So full house on that one. Now, just before we preview the game at the weekend at West Ham, Tom, Arnie Slot, he's come out tonight and said, you know, he wants to be Liverpool manager, that negotiations are taking place with his club, and he's confident that they'll reach a conclusion very, very soon, because he's told them his intention is to manage Liverpool. So it looks as though Arnie's going to be the new manager. I mean, obviously, I didn't know who he was before I heard his name come out the other day. I've read up a fair amount about him, and he seems to sort of fit what we're looking for, doesn't he? He's got, he's got enthusiasm. He's done well with really teams that weren't expected to achieve anything in the COVID season. I think he was managing AZ Alkmaar, and they would have gone on to have won the league or had a real good chance of winning the league. But the Dutch FA sort of abandoned the league at where it was when they were level on points with Ajax. And then he won the league with his current club for the first time in 19 years. So although he's coming from what is known as a lesser league, you can't do any more than bring success to teams on where he's had a low budget, lost his best players, but still managed to get them to be competitive. And, you know, he would have won two league titles. He's won one. He's second in the league at the moment. So you'd have to say that there is, and you read about him, it's quite impressive, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, I like you, Les. I didn't know much about him, to be honest. I looked up. He was offered the Tottenham job first of all before Postecoglou. Apparently, yeah. he wanted him, and he turned it down. So, I think he's the right age. He's ambitious. He fits all the criteria. He plays the same sort of football as not the same football. It's more like Guardiola's type of football, but he plays. The same sort of system. He introduces youth, so, and he works on a budget. What's not, they love him. So I think we've got to give the I think I've seen again from the Twitter arty. I was going to call it the Twitter arty, but today, to be honest. But I think I apologize to anybody, all the people who listen to the podcast for that. But I think over the last couple of days, that's what they've been. But looking at him, and I think, you know, to be honest, there is a good group of players there to work with. And I'm sure with a new manager and new ideas, and, you know, given time, which I think the supporters will do, I really hope the lad is successful and drives us forward. But, you know, like, I messaged Graeme Souness yesterday to ask him what he thought about him or what he'd heard about him. And he come back to me, he said, very similar to what we'd said about, you know, like, he knew who he was, but, like, he hadn't heard much about him. But again, he said, like, the massive shoes to fill. But if he's given time, I'm sure he'll be a success. So I think that's like most all Liverpoolians. It looks like he's going to be the one. So we're a bit underwhelmed. Everyone said underwhelmed, but like really want the lad to do really well.
Ben, I mean, Tom's used the word underwhelmed there. There was nobody really that was going to get your sort of, you know, jumping off your seat and tracking planes like we did when, you know, it was announced that Jürgen was taking over from Brendan the fraud. You know what I mean? So, you know, whoever it was going to be, you know, people are going to say, why him? You know, even if it would have been Amorim, he'd have had his detractors, Xabi Alonso. You know, although he's a Liverpool legend, you would have had people turning around and saying, well, has he got enough experience in the top flight of, you know, of managing the number of games? And, you know, so even he'd have had, he'd have, he'd have been sort of welcomed, you know, a lot more because of his connections with the club and him being a legend. But as I say, you know, you've got to be impressed with this guy's sort of CV, and it's up to us, the fans, to sort of, you know, get behind him and help him succeed. You know, there might not be the bond between the fans and him like there was with the fans and Jürgen, but there was never the bond between Bob and the fans like there was with Shanks and the fans, as your dad will probably tell you. So that doesn't mean that he can't be successful in his own way. So what are your thoughts on him, Ben?
I didn't know who he was on Tuesday. So I'll hold my hands up here. No idea. When I heard his name at first, I thought it was a bit of a parody. I didn't realise it was a real person's name. Arnie's not his actual name, is it? It's short for something, I think. It's like a hybrid of his middle and first names. I don't know anything about him, Les, so it's all going to be new to me. I didn't really know much about Gerard Houllier when he came in. I knew a little bit about Rafa Benitez. I knew obviously more about Jurgen Klopp. I don't think it really matters if the bond between the manager and the fans. I mean, Rafa had a brilliant bond, didn't he? He's gone on to manage Everton and he's still got a decent bond with the fans. As long as he comes in, tries his best, does a good job, then he'll get my backing. I've looked at it, I've done a bit of reading into him today when I was on the train, and his record, it's decent, isn't it? I wouldn't say it's exceptional, but it's decent. He was robbed of the league potentially in the COVID season with Alkmaar, won the league with Feyenoord, and then he's second, but he's not going to win the league this year, but he has won the cup, hasn't he? I think he's about 9 points behind in the league or something this year. But from reading what he was that Dutch forward, the brilliant one.
Van Basten.
Yeah, what he said about him. He was really complimentary about the way he plays, how attacking his teams are. And the fans of Feyenoord seem to say that as well. His assistant, Van Persie, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen, is it? He's been offered a job somewhere, hasn't he, I think? Or he turned down a job to be his assistant. With him being Dutch, I wonder if he'll try and keep Linders. I know Linders has said, hasn't he, that he's not going to be a number two for anyone now, but it wouldn't surprise me if he tries to keep him, to try and keep a little bit of continuity. I was firmly in the Alonso camp. Because of his connection to the club and the job that he's done at Leverkusen, which is exceptional. I think he would have been, well, he was my choice, and I think he was the club's choice as well. I didn't really know anything about Amorim either. Never really heard of him until about 2 weeks ago. Apparently they've been interviewed, haven't they? And Gary O'Neill's been interviewed and a few of us. The club are generally quite good at these kind of things now, aren't they? With FSG, for all the detractors, have set up the club well for eventualities like this. They've had time to plan it. Jürgen hasn't threw them under the bus and just left them and said, I'm gone. I'd like to think that they've done the due diligence on them. It seems to be the case. Edward seems to have done his research on him. Let's just hope he comes in and does what Bob did to Bill and takes it the next step.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Tom, just before we move on from this, It's amazing, isn't it, how all the in the knows who claim to be in the knows on Twitter, and they have all these thousands of followers, you know, got it wrong again. None of them had the name Arnie Slot, you know, as even being linked. I suppose, you know, many of them knew who he was. Yet, just like they did know about Szoboszlai last summer, they didn't know about Endo last summer, and they didn't know about Gravenberch last summer. But people still believe everything they say. You know what I mean? Last summer, it was all about Kone and Taram. You know what I mean? They never got onto the Cancedo bus when that was bubbling under the surface. So the sooner people start stop believing in all the speculation that they produce to just get clicks, and start sort of just listening to the people who you know and trust, the likes of Joycey, then you'll probably they won't get as wound up when a transfer doesn't happen.
One of the best tweets I seen was when his name come up for the very first time, and someone tweeted. I won't say the first part of what he tweeted, but he said, "Isn't he a character on The Simpsons?" I was sitting there thinking, "Is this a wind up? Is this a genuine name?" Because out of the blue, nobody had mentioned him. Nobody had known about him. And as I said, I found out then that he was up for the Tottenham job. Apparently, Postecoglou got it. Ended up getting it, but just thought. But I'm like everyone. Whoever comes in will get the support. I think the Liverpool supporters are pretty sensible, and they say, you know, if he comes in and he gives his best, as long as he's not like Bodgers.
Hodgson.
Yeah.
God, if he's like Hodgson, like, Christ.
You know right away what type of manager you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, like, they endear themselves to the club. He comes across as very much in that type of mould. My only concern, I can't think of many, with the exception of Johan Cruyff, many really great Dutch managers, really.
Van Gaal was all right.
Yeah.
Van Gaal.
And Gus, I think.
Yeah.
Gus, I think.
What was the difference? Rinus Michael.
Yeah.
But they were all from the Cruyff era. But he said he's a disciple of Pep Guardiola. He loves the way he plays his football and everything. But don't forget, Guardiola was brought up on the football principles of Johan Cruyff. Mm. You know, he started it all in Barcelona. You know what? He was the brains behind a whole lot of it, and right the way through. So, who knows? This lad might turn out to be, you know, the next really big thing. We could really, in 2 years' time, we could be talking about, you know, what an amazing signing he's become. Because I don't believe Guardiola will be there much longer.
No, I was saying this as well today, Tom.
I don't think,
immaterial
of what happens this season, which I think they'll win the league.
They'll win it by a canter now, I think.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, Ben. Arsenal are not going
Tottenham
away,
will,
you know.
Tottenham will beat Arsenal at the weekend.
I'm not so sure, you know.
I don't think Arsenal will win at Tottenham.
No, I don't.
I don't think Arsenal will win at Tottenham. And I think there's nothing. If you think about what happened last night, Tom,
yeah,
at Goodison, and you think that Tottenham can do to Arsenal, basically what Everton did to us, they will have great pleasure in stopping Arsenal winning the league.
Yeah.
They will. You know what I mean?
If Arsenal go there and win, then I'll hold my hands up and I'll say, Christ, they're ready for it. But I can't see City dropping points. Genuinely can't. This is a tough test for them tonight, and they'll actually walk in the park.
What I will say, Ben and Tom, is that if Arsenal do win at Tottenham at the weekend, I don't see Arsenal dropping any points in the remaining games with who they've got left.
Everton aren't going to play like they did yesterday, are they?
And then City have then got to go to Tottenham in the last week of the season. So I think it's the, and he always thought this anyway, because he always said that Tottenham were going to be the king makers and the king breakers. And, you know, I was hoping that we were going to be involved in that shake up as well. But I think the game on Sunday is going to be the title decider for Arsenal. If they don't win that game, I think, as you said, City will win it in a canter. If Arsenal win, then I think it will all depend on how City get on then.
Do you know what though, Les? I've said to you before, if City come to Tottenham, Tottenham are not going to go hell for leather against Manchester City.
Unless top four.
And give them the title to Arsenal. That is never going to happen.
They are if they can get in the Champions League, Tom. Because that's going to be... I mean, whether you like it or not, and if it was...
They're 6 points behind, aren't they?
Yeah, but they've got games in hand as well. So, you know, I mean, they might not be in a position at that point to be able to catch Aston Villa, but they might be. You know what I mean? So it'll all depend on what the situation is in the league. One thing I want to ask you just before we move on, Tom. David Coote and Stuart Atwell, right, being appointed to go to represent the PGOML at the Euros on VAR. I just wondered what your thoughts were on that. Tom.
I think it sums up to a T the standard of our referees.
You know what? You're missing the point completely.
I put a picture of a couple of clowns, didn't I?
You're missing the point completely, Tom. The FA know what they're doing. They're sending out the crap because they can't referee England. They know exactly what they're doing. It's tactical.
God. Yeah. Jesus almighty. You couldn't make that up, Les, could you?
Cues
are that well.
I mean, one guy was just in charge of a game where at the club he was on VAR for, you know, this is Stuart Atwell. You know, a sort of issued the statements as soon as the final whistle went. And the same VAR official, you know, who's when we had that scripted awful mic'd up show with Howard Webb, you know, he's there and he's saying with the Doku McAllister incident, both players going in high and McAllister's feet are sort of
planted on the ground.
Virtually on the ground. And you know, and this is a guy who gets sent to the Euros. And David Coote, well, the less said about him, the better. You know what I mean? He is an absolute, total and utter clown of the first degree.
They all are. They're all crap.
Yeah. Anyway, Tom, what do you reckon it will be? We haven't got Pete here tonight with his team sheet, so because he's had his retirement due. So what do you reckon team-wise for Saturday morning then, Tom?
I think
who would you play alongside Virgil?
Gonzalez.
Right. Would you start Robbo again? And what would your midfield be? Because I think Gakpo would probably be back. So you can make a change up front, but just what would you make up in the midfield be?
I think you go with McAllister. You probably against West Ham, you'd probably go with Endo. And he probably will throw in Gravenberch or Harvey. I think
a midfield of Harvey, McAllister, and Endo has got actually no height with it.
Yeah, that's the only trouble, isn't it? So Gravenberch, he probably would be the one. But I think Kwanzaa will come in. I think Trent will play. I think. Robbo will probably play, although I didn't think Simicast did anything really outstanding. Took a couple of corners, really, but that's about it. Really summed them up. But really, I probably Robbo will play up front. I think Gakpo will play. I think probably Diaz will play, and probably he'll go with Mo again. Nunes will probably go on the bench.
What do you reckon, Ben?
Ali, Trent. Although it wouldn't surprise me if Trent was dropped. So Trent at right back, Verge, Kwanzaa, Robbo. Midfield, Maka, Harvey, Gravenberch. Up front, Gakpo, if he's available. Diaz and the other one. Yeah, you're throwing a dart. It could be Dan's. I doubt it, but it could be. But more likely, I think Nunes gets dropped.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it'll be Mo, Gakpo and Diaz up front. Midfield is going to be interesting. McAllister will play. And I think he could go with Gravenberch and Szoboszlai, me, just because of the height thing. And then I also think that Joe Gomez could come in at left back for Robbo.
Yeah, possibly.
But we'll see. So what's your prediction, Tom?
I'm gonna still go for a win. Jesus Christ, I must be insane. Right, I'm gonna go for 2-1 for Liverpool.
Ben?
It's not that insane, Tom. West Ham have been poor. I'm going to match your score though, because we're not keeping a clean sheet, are we? Jesus, we're not keeping a clean sheet. 2-1 or 3-1.
Yeah, I'll go 2-1 as well. Just hope that the strikers have the shooting boots back on again. So at the end of this, probably the most difficult podcast we've done in over the last year, after suffering our first derby defeat at Goodison since 2010, we'll end this podcast. One thing I will say though, and if you, it's never nice to lose a derby, but when you've only lost 2 in 30, I'd take that again over the next 30 derbies, only losing 2. So it's not a bad record, is it? And it has to end. It has to end somewhere. It was 7 years once when Andy Thing scored the winning goal, I think in 1978 at the Park End. And but yeah, so let's hope it's another. Well, I know they won't be at Goodison after next season, but let's hope that when they go to the new ground, we sort of make it as difficult for them to win there as we have done at Goodison since 2010. On that note, I'll end this podcast and say, as I always do, justice for the 97. Don't buy the sun, and you'll never walk alone. Until next time, see you soon.